Copy, 4 DJW Mobile.
Amy popped the contact out of her eyeball in Spartanburg, and her glasses and her other contacts are at home. So I am making a trip to Spartanburg to deliver glasses and contacts. and I have, like, an overloaded day already as it was.
I'd come over this way and go out Gap Creek Road. Man, that's a quick way to get out there without going Wade Hampton all the way, but... Just my call.
To work. She goes, she does some zigzagging through 101 and over there where the old Cunningham Fire Department, two bay fire department was before it moved down there to the lake. She, Arlington Road or something like that. I can't remember all the names of them. But anyway, she comes out over there at the Benson Chrysler place and then gets on Wade Hampton. I just come down here to Ingalls and get on Wade Hampton right here and go. She likes the zigzaggy way.
Street you mean there? I never did. We moved here 14 years ago, so it's been since us that they changed that fire department down to the lake. That's the only one I've known, but I think I know what you mean. There's a business in there now, and it's a Butler building, isn't it?
Bay Metal Building, and I'm trying to remember the name of that road right beside that building, but I can't. That's not coming to me.
Yeah, you and me both. I just follow Susie. If I'm looking for an address, I put it in the GPS, and I always tell people Susie's blonde, so she makes mistakes too.
Just needed a little bit of time. It's Ansel Creek Road or something like that.
Well, Rusty's been kind of down. He's got flu-like symptoms, I guess you would call it, headache and that. And sorry to hear about that. But he's doing all right and taking the Paxlovid. But he sure hadn't been feeling good, so I haven't heard much of him on here. Well, last night I didn't stay on the net very long. But I did work one station in Italy, some special event, and that was about the size of it. I just sat there and looked for special ones, you know. But I had a real wonderful visit with Shane and K4, JBQ, and really enjoyed that. That was after the net. I just waited a while and threw my call sign out there. And if Shane's out there, he'll usually answer. And Larry answered, and then Shane jumped in, so that was enjoyable.
Roundtables are at that point in time after the net, after everybody's settled down, and you hear somebody on the radio, and like I'll be doing stuff at the computer sometimes and get started on something like that. And some of the best roundtables are about that time of night. There used to be a group that did that. Every single night, maybe 30 minutes after the net, they would get on there and they'd talk till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning almost every single night.
Well, I can't go that long. I poop out too quick. But we went a long time until I started getting so hoarse I couldn't talk anymore. Shoot. Anyways, Bernice is over here. What the hell?
Hi, babe.
And she's trying to make a lemon cookie. That's similar to the cookies that we bought from Aldi's. They're a German lemon cookie. And she's worked her tail off trying to replicate it. Because when they do their German week, they get in a bunch of German stuff. And then it's a long time before they get in any more. They didn't have any of my lemon cookies. So I told Carlton down there at the Taylor's, Aldi's place, I'd needle him every time I went in there. When are you going to get my lemon cookies in? So Bernice is trying to replicate them now.
better solution anyway. If Bernice makes them, it's probably going to be better anyway because she can tailor them. She probably, by this time, she knows what you like.
T.R. Yeah, she's been bringing me one every now and then here. Of a morning when I get up after I brush my teeth and that, before I even shave, I have a cup of coffee and two lemon cookies. And I just ran out of the last ones. And we bought, I think, 12 packages of them when they had them in. So they lasted for a long, long time. But they ran out. And so I was down at Walmart the other day. And lo and behold, they had lemon Oreo cookies. And I thought, oh, those will be good. No, they're not. They're excellent cookie, but they're too sweet. And I don't like horribly sweet stuff. Although Bernice makes a lot of different things, she knows better than to drown it in sugar. But I got another one here. I'm going to let it set up for a little bit. The icing in the center is still kind of molten there.
Same thing, not the cookies, but the coffee in the morning for Amy. Since she has to get up and leave and go to work, and I get to stay there, and normally don't have to. Here lately, I've been doing it a little bit, but I fix her coffee for her in the morning. Used to be the other way around. Not anymore. My, how things change, huh?
And Bernice makes the coffee at night before we go to bed. She puts the right amount of coffee in it, and she's trying to replicate what these little cups used to make. Now, we didn't buy the filled cups. We had cups that you refill, and she'd always have those made up. She bought on because I get up before she does. She stays up messing around looking at recipes and stuff on the computer real late usually, or else reads a book. And so I get up like this morning and I come in and I turn the coffee pot on. All I got to do is push the button and it's ready to go. But it's a regular coffee pot now, and then she puts it in a glass lined thermos. And that works really well for us.
Mother-in-law does that down in Fort Myers. She sets it all up, and whoever gets up first turns on the coffee pot. I've done that at home every now and then. I loaded up the night before, but I just can't remember. That's just something that sits my memory all the time. Don't think about it until I need it. W4DJW.
N0TR. Well, how's your programming going on that CAN bus thing? That's really interesting.
Figured out and, you know, got the parts that I needed and got all that stuff working. And then he said we were going to have a kickoff meeting at the end of January, and we didn't have it yet. And then a buddy of his called me and said that he's still working on that, but he's not quite sure where they are. So I'm just kind of in limbo right now, just waiting for that to go. Plus, the Vandersteen guy has come back and said they after I finished all that, they were going through some extensive unit testing, and they found, this is the third thing they found that they didn't foresee happening that I was working on this morning, is that when you mute, it doesn't come back. If you try to change the volume after, or the channel, that you're, the input channel that you're on after you mute, it doesn't tell you it's muted. So they are adding to the specs. Scope creep is what we call that in programming. So I've been working on that for them. The things like that. This is the third item like that that came up. And you can't think of everything on the initial pass. So that's normal. That's the way it works in software development. You think of as much as you can, and then people find other stuff, and you add that as time goes by. So there's that programming, and then there's getting the repeater ready for the replacement for the repeater we're talking on right now. That's keeping me busy. And then there's one other programming thing in the loop. Can't remember what that is at the moment. But it's just constant programming. Oh, yeah. This morning I was working on generating ID cards for January for everybody that paid their dues in January. Generating the ID cards and the receipts and, you know, put them in envelopes and all that when the Vandersteen guy called me. So I kind of like it this way. It's just one thing after another all day long. I love it, staying busy like that.
Man, Dave, and I imagine Amy is too. Well, I'm looking at my 2024 one here, so I was probably one of the first ones. They got it in, and I just renewed my ARRL membership this morning. I was shocked. I know ours went up, and I think that's fine, because it hadn't been raised in years. But ARRL's $59 now for a regular membership. And I think it was like $81 if you got the printed edition of QST. So I'm going to start watching it online. I usually don't read magazines online, but I just pick and choose what I want to read in QST. But I did like getting that, but maybe I'll order it later. You know, pay the $59 now, and then whenever you got to pay the $20-some more dollars for the QST, it won't hurt so bad that way, you reckon?
Read those, the QST and the AMA, Academy of Model Aeronautics. They had Model Aviation magazine, and I used to read those things cover to cover when they came in. I mean, there wouldn't be an ad that went through there that I didn't see, at least see, to see if I wanted something like that or somebody that did something that was interesting, and I'd read exactly how it was that they did it. But here lately, since I retired, I don't have any time anymore. So I did, though, read up about all that controversy that they had at the ARRL, and I'm with the ARRL. Printing prices have gone through the roof. They're doing everything they can. A bunch of people are getting mad at them about, and it doesn't matter what they do, somebody's going to get mad. So I'm pulling for the ARRL. I think they make really good, sound decisions. And, you know, people were calling for other people to resign because they weren't liking the way that they did things, and they were fully transparent about all of the stuff that they were doing. You could look it up and you could see it. So I don't know. You know, I guess we have a divided nation. We need somebody with a needle and thread and get back in there and sew us all back together. W4DJW.
And Gerald GR. I agree, Dame, and I agree with ARRL. And I know the printing prices, they're unbelievably high. I worked at a printing place, actually a couple of them, but one of them for a short time, and I switched over to another place, and one of our biggest presses was a 7-color offset press. It was 345 feet long. It was called a Komori. And that was the most amazing machine I ever seen in my life, I think. Almost. I've seen a few amazing ones. But I think that thing did 8,000 Breyer's ice cream boxes an hour. It was just unbelievable, Dave, the rate at which they come through there. And if something would go wrong, those people down at the end that were watching it, they just start throwing those things away from the conveyor show and get jammed up till they could get it stopped. But it's amazing that machine that they had that dried it. Actually, I got a picture of that, which you're not supposed to have, but I did because I was maintenance. And when it went over it, there was some kind of radiation went down through it, but they wanted me to learn from the tech representative when he come in. And he opened that thing up. It had 250,000 volts coming into it. And he said, "Stick your arm down in there, Tom. It looked like a cloud. I can't remember what the gas was, Dave. But you put your hand down in that enclosure, which was fairly large, maybe 4 foot by 4 foot. And you move your hand around, and it feels like water, and but it was gas. And then it was the dielectric to keep the 250,000 volts from arcing. And he says, hold your breath. He says, if you breathe it in, that gas would go into your lungs, down at the bottom of your lungs, and suffocate you. That was pretty interesting.
I saw a movie about miners, coal miners that were... that knew what that was. That same thing can happen to you when you're down deep in a coal mine. I guess it's some similar kind of nitrogen without oxygen, or I don't know how they explained what it was. But that is a weird phenomenon. You can drown without a drop of water in sight.
It was true, and I didn't breathe. But it was amazing that was the dielectric strength to keep that from parking over. But it had this screen underneath of it, and it looked like it was gold. And those things had come through there at that rate. And that seven-color offset press, you'd think all the inks, you know, were all sort of a jelly-like substance. And when each one of the seven stages had a different color in it, and when it'd go underneath that thing at that speed, it would dry them. And then, on top of that, as it was going along, Dave, they had these monstrous rolls of, they called it board, but it really wasn't, and that the Breyers ice cream boxes were made on. We made everything for Kellogg's and that, too. But as that would run out of paper, it would switch one of those huge rolls in there automatically. And all it would do would be slow down to a slower rate. It would never stop. And I had to work on that thing. That was a pain. But, oh, man, what a marvelous machine that they got nowadays.
Over to the SouthTech was a thing that they had over there at the old Palmetto Center at the airport, downtown Greenville Airport. And they set up machines over there, Tom. It's remarkable, again, right? When there's this wall-to-wall machines, the manufacturing tools, and some of them big enough that you could park your car on the bed, right? It could do machine work on your car from the size of the turret and the size of the rails, the move parts around. It is amazing, but I imagine the energy would be kind of like when I was at Michelin, that energy bill. I think they said that a few times, their plants, the Spartanburg and the Greenville plant and the Anderson plant paid more for electricity than all of the city of Greenville combined. Them by themselves, their electric bill was higher than the whole city of Greenville. And that's, you know, that's a lot of electricity there.
Well, we got the nuclear plant up there. I wish they'd start the procedure for getting another one so that we wouldn't get behind, because they have to build these plants to be 150% of what you're going to need for the surges and all, the peaks. And this one guy from Duke was telling them they need to get started now, even though they're putting up tons of solar in that and laying off people, because it takes like 10 years to get one on the books. And I heard this morning on TV there that we're the fastest growing state in the union now.
To watch this guy that does reviews of electric vehicles, EV, and solar. He's done reviews of solar, too. He's really good. He's on YouTube. And he has electric EV truck. And a friend of his had the Cybertruck, the Tesla version of the truck. And he did reviews of those. And he was showing in that review what he had for a solar system. And he generates so much electricity, he can never use he never has a power bill. He makes money. He feeds the power company. Now, he has electric vehicles, so he requires a lot of energy. But with just a few panels on top of his house, now, they're not cheap panels either. They're really expensive panels, but I believe they generate like 5,000 watts. And he only has to have like about 9 or 10 of them, something in that area. And he's always selling power back to the power company, and he powers everything in his house off electricity and all of his vehicles off of electricity. So, you know, if people were to follow that model, we wouldn't need any power generating plants. And it's not taking up a whole lot of room on his house. Now, there are days that he doesn't get sunshine, but I think where he lives, it's more sunshine than it is not sunshine. But, you know, with the way the weather is not always the same everywhere, if their power grids were like that going forward, you wouldn't need any power plants.
Sure. Well, you know, the house she used to live in next door to us over here, Melissa, she put up, her and her brother, they lived there. The father died, but they put up solar cells, and she just very forthcoming about it. And I said, well, I bet that cost a lot of money. And she said, $40,000. I went over and looked at them, and this was just before that new law went in, you know, because they don't particularly want you doing that now, I guess. They don't support it too much from what these guys putting it up said, but don't quote me on that. I just know what they told me, and they said get it done before January and the law changes. But she's never had an electric bill since. And they look like real quality panels, and they're on the back side of her house. But she's got great big oak trees out there, and I warned her last year that they were going to rub those solar cells. I think they were 40 or 48 volt cells, and she said she's never had an electric bill since, and they went ahead and just paid it off right quick. But David, they have a finite number too. They wear out. And what concerned me was, if you get a bad hailstorm down here, which we do, will they hold up? I know they're pretty durable. But at the same time, if it destroys your roof, if you got to take all those solar cells off and before you can ever put a new roof on, and she don't have batteries with it.
I don't know how old those are. I know this guy, he doesn't leave old stuff laying around. If it gets old and there's new stuff that comes out, he tears it down and puts new stuff in. And that's because he makes a lot of money on YouTube, I'm sure. I'm sure he makes so much on YouTube that he could afford to tear it down and rebuild it a dozen times, and still he'd be making a whole lot more money than he was spending on his stuff. So that's when you're doing that, your whole perspective changes once you're doing something like that. But the longer time goes by, the better the technology is, the smaller footprint you need to collect enough energy to supply your needs, and the better the storage gets, the better the batteries get. And he's all the time doing reviews about the batteries and stuff like that too. So that the whole technology is moving forward. And I imagine it will get to a place. And there's even another technology out on top of that called hot rocks. I don't know if you've heard about hot rocks, but they're supposed to. So some of the batteries, like the lithium iron phosphate batteries, are really limited to temperature. They're fragile when you get below. If you can mess them up if you try to charge them when it's below zero. But they've got hot rocks now that you don't take battery energy to keep them from getting to zero. The hot rocks warm up during the day, and they keep them warm all night long. And so you're not expending any energy. And that just uses sun from the solar, from the heat, the radiant heat from the sun. So there's just all kind of options. And it's not till you get your hand, you get your sleeves rolled up, and you get your hands down in there up to your elbows that you start understanding what all the options are. All right, looking out from the outside and looking in, it might look like, you can't ever do that. But once you get on the inside and you're looking outside, the possibilities are limitless.
Yeah, that's a good attitude towards it, that's for sure. I would withhold my, thoughts on it because, of course, I'm not near as knowledgeable as you are, and number one, and it sounds a little bit that they're ahead of themselves yet, but it can probably be done. We've always managed to come up with something, but right now, as far as putting solar on a net, I know, for example, K9JDP, he put his up, Jim, and part of them's on the first ones, I think, when Bernice, he put on, they're all on the roof. And he wished he'd put them behind it. And I know K4SV's got, I don't know how many, 20,000 watt panels or something. Or he said, I'll be selling electricity back to the grid, but he's got a lot of acreage up there at his place. I just, I'm a little reluctant at what would you do if you got to take all of those things off, the added expense to putting on a new roof, but that sounds interesting. I like the idea of these small nuclear reactors that they're coming up with now that'll, for example, provide 250,000 homes with their electricity and last for 10 years where you have to refuel them, and I think 10, maybe longer. And they're working on that, too. Now if they can just figure out a place to dispose of it that's better than what they've got now.
It's another technology that's come, yet another one, the nuclear battery, which when it's fully depleted, I mean, so the battery the size that it would take to power your cell phone, for example, would last for 50 years on one charge, and it would be rechargeable. But when it's fully depleted, it is the highest quality copper you can get. The depletion of the nuclear battery yields high-grade copper, right? Instead of yielding something that is dangerous, it yields something that is valuable. So that's one of them that they've got on the drawing table. And eventually that will replace the batteries. They'll say, back in the every day they have to charge it. In their car they were charging it. When they were flying our airplanes they were charging it. And nowadays we don't even think about it. You don't even charge your battery, maybe twice in your lifetime. And then when you're done, whenever that is, oh, Amy's calling. I got to get that. I'll be back in a minute. W4DJW.
Okay, Dave, in 0TR.